Woo! Welcome to the Some Work All Play podcast. We are so happy to be with you today.
Happy Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
And we're recording on the only day better than a Tuesday.
What is that?
Marathon Monday.
Marathon Monday.
Ah, it's the best. We've been watching it all morning. We actually delayed our podcast recording. We're like, we need these like live hot updates coming in. And it's been so fun.
Yeah. So Boston Marathon on a Monday every day, Patriots Day. And, you know, it's always good because you never know if it's going to be that one year that something totally magical happens. And if we release the podcast on Tuesday without talking about it, we're behind the eight ball and it's not very good.
Okay. My argument is that something magical happens every year at Boston. I don't know if it's just me. Maybe I'm just like a sucker for this. It's like high schoolers watching The Notebook and I'm like, this is just all so great. Like starting with the wheelchair athletes up on into the men's race and the women's race. I was just like every athlete. I was like, this is so inspiring.
You're a total sucker.
I am a sucker. What's wrong with me?
Yeah. Everyone on Twitter was complaining about the coverage. Like every single person. And you're like, this is the best coverage I've ever seen. And I'm like, Megan, you should see what they say on Twitter. And you're like, there's a reason I'm not on Twitter. So I love it. I respect it. Really good vibes coming from you on Marathon Monday. I'm a little bit like hanging in there after the crash.
You kind of smell like you ran the Boston Marathon. I say that with the highest honor. There is like a stank coming from over there, which probably means high testosterone. It's a good thing.
Yeah. Maybe because my training's backed off a little bit, my stank has increased. But maybe it's also because I have a lot of trouble washing myself because my one arm is basically just totally out of it right now. And so it's how do you get just the soap on one hand and get it to the other armpit. So it's just one armpit that's really smelly. So I'm sorry. That one armpit though is terrible. It's a toxic waste dump.
You just mimed as you were doing it. And then I could start to smell it as you mimed and opened it up.
The arms need to stay down.
But this is what I'm here for. Just call me in. I'll come wash your armpits.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, I do it to Leo. I'll just wash all my boys' armpits. Okay.
Pits, tits, butthole. That's our relationship.
I can do all this.
Okay, perfect. We have the best episode for you today. We're going to start with some updates from the crash. Just for those that are interested, Megan officially reaching her taper for the Canyons 100K, then the U.S. Olympic jersey controversy, Boston Marathon instant reactions, some hot takes there, a study on carb ingestion, a study on ketones and cognition, new details on Parker Valby's cross training that is kind of mind blowing, a question on process versus results, maybe a steep climbing science corner. I don't know if we're going to get there. More track controversy. Ultras with drop, an exciting new shoe, and lots more.
So much coming. I don't think we're going to get to the science corner, which is okay because we have so much goodness coming. I was actually reflecting as I was watching Boston this morning.
Yeah.
I was eating a slice of cold pizza and watching Boston and drinking matcha.
Yeah.
And reading science journal articles. And I was like, we are living our dream lives. This is work. How wild is that?
It's the best ever. Though, that being said, I understand why you went for pizza because last night you did the final big week before Canyons, which is going to be in a little less than 2 weeks. And we have a rule in our house that generally we always have bars near the bed, like energy bars, but we shouldn't be having to eat them because that's a sign that we're a little underfueled for whatever reason.
And we almost never do, but it's nice just to have them in the house in case you wake up at 2 a.m. and you're just like, I need a bar.
Yeah, just like I say, every athlete should have an emergency gel on them at all times because if you get out there and you're a mile away from the house and you're just like, I can't do this, you have an emergency caffeinated gel and you're good to go. Last night though, every single time I woke up, I heard a rustling. It was like I was living with a big old chipmunk. You were going through our food. Maybe it was like being in a campsite and there was a bear coming through.
Well, kind of, I woke up this morning and it kind of looked like the setting of like a college fraternity because I walked into our bathroom and there was just like bars scattered everywhere. I had an entire Clif Bar and an entire Gatorade bar in the middle of the night.
After we ate tons of pizza the night before, you went down before bed and ate like a pint of ice cream that we got from a listener who felt really bad about my accident. So you're fueling Megan's training. I don't know. Your body's on fire.
Yeah. I don't know what's happened. I feel like I've been like training has really stepped up as we're coming into the taper block of Canyons and I've been hungry. Been a hungry bitch. But actually the timing of your accident has worked out really well. I mean, very unfortunate.
Oh yeah. No, it's perfect. I always say that was a great accident timing. Just awesome accident all around. Grade A to get hit by a car if there's the best time ever.
Because so many people send us carbs. Like they know our love language and it was right in the peak of my block. And we have so many carb options downstairs. It's amazing.
True. It's so good. Okay. So let's go straight to your taper. How are you feeling entering the last 2 weeks? Training starting to back off a little bit, stepping up to the 100K distance, starting to get real.
I'm excited. Yeah. I'm super excited. Well, I feel like I'm at the point where honestly, I'm stepping to the starting line feeling like I've already won to like how I feel about it to some extent, because I think like for me, before deciding to do Canyons 100K, I wasn't taking very many risks in training.
Definitely.
And now as a result of Canyons 100K, I've really leveled up my training. And it's the first time in like years that I've believed in myself again to my true capabilities.
Yeah.
And that by itself is a win. Like no matter what happens at Canyons, like Canyons could be an adventure of a shit show or it could be a great day.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to look back on this training block and be like, you know, I've done two great races. I've just really enjoyed the process of waking up and being like, I have a race out there.
Yeah.
And so I feel great about it.
It's so wild that we're here.
It is wild.
Just thinking about the heart issues and everything, like to get to the point that you're confident to step up to 100K is bonkers. And I'm so proud of you. Like, how does that vulnerability feel now that the event is getting a little more real?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely does feel vulnerable. I'm like, this could be a really long day. Like,
then we'll share. I'm going to be crewing you. I'm going to be the best crew ever. I'm going to come out of retirement with my wrist that is totally fucked up right now. And Megan, I'm going to give you gels like no one's ever given you gels before.
I'm going to give you the biggest high fives with that wrist.
Yeah.
I actually saw Riley Brady, who's also racing Canyons 100K. I was out biking and they were out running. And I gave them a high five at 20 miles an hour. And I was like, I hope I didn't just give them a shoulder injury.
Or maybe, you know, we root for Riley, but you don't need shoulders to run. As I'm learning, running with just one arm right now.
That's fair, actually. Maybe I was gifting them the T-Rex action.
Yes. Getting them to prevent some of the pit stink that I have from coming up. Because if you just hold your arms close to your body when they're hurt, no pit stink. So how's that vulnerability feeling, though? Is it like...
It is vulnerable, but I mean, I don't know. I've done a lot of hard things in life. And at the end of the day, if something bad happens at Canyons, I don't think it's a reflection of like my fitness. It's just a reflection of the fact that sometimes ultras are, you know, shit happens.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's probably easier said than done, like the mechanics of that. But no, I feel confident. I feel ready. I'm excited.
Yeah.
And, you know, just to get here healthy and ready to go is a gift. And I think I have that extra layer of gratitude because like that hasn't always been the case.
Yeah.
So maybe that will change as we get closer to Canyons, but I'm really excited.
I'm so proud of you. As long as you don't get hit by a car.
Oh, yeah. No Subarus up in this grill.
Most importantly, what are you wearing? What is the fit going to be? Tell us about your drip.
The swap crop top, of course.
Crop top.
Shorts, which I love. And I have to wear a vest.
Okay.
It's part of the required gear. Like, I feel like I'm not really a vest girl. There's so much bounce. The bottles, like, I don't know, when I'm running with bottles, it just feels like a lot.
So technically, they say you have to wear a pack, not a vest. And I have thought about this a lot. And a fanny pack is a type of pack.
That is fair.
You can wear a waist belt.
I think they clarified that there must have been a lawyer on this that was like doing battle with you. I think they clarified that it was a pack that goes on your shoulders.
I'm just going to wear, you know how people sometimes wear shirts that look like tuxedos? They have it just painted on.
Just
a pack painted on and then a waist belt for crewing you. But the reason I asked you about what you were wearing is I wanted to segue a little bit into the most humorous controversy of the last week that's also a little sad is that Nike unveiled the Team USA jerseys for the Olympics and they were put on two mannequins. So the guy mannequin looks classic, kind of looks like a Microsoft Paint job to a certain extent. It's like blue and red just kind of sprayed at it.
I kind of liked it. It was a little bit psychedelic.
Yeah.
Actually, Leo smashed our TV with a, what was he? He kind of, it was like a bat and it kind of looks like our TV just like magnified on in jersey form. So it's kind of like how we watched the Boston Marathon.
Our TV is like watching the Boston Marathon through a lava lamp.
That's true.
We need to get a new TV.
At one point they had the side by side of like the men and the women and you know, they're running at different times.
Yeah.
But it looked like because of our TV that they were joined together and that Emma Bates was leading the whole race.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is the exact reason you should have a TV that's a little bit psychedelic.
Yeah, exactly. It leaves a lot up to the imagination. But you know what did not leave a lot up to the imagination? The women's jersey on the mannequin. Did you see this, Megan?
It was wild. So
how would you phrase it? I see what you're doing with your hands, but you need to bring that to the listeners.
I'm like essentially making a V with my hands up from the crotch region.
Ever seen the New World Order in the like back in the old days of wrestling, like when I was a kid, and they would do the suck it motion. That's exactly what Megan was doing, but a little bit slower.
Yeah, I was doing it very essentially.
Yeah.
But it left a lot of skin down there. And I feel like whoever was involved in the designing of this has never had a Brazilian wax in their life. Like clearly there was no woman involved in designing this, or at least like taking the pictures and being like, this is the final image we're going to choose.
So what I've heard about it is that in general, the way it was presented is not the way it actually is worn. But whoever put this jersey on the mannequin, it essentially leaves it with just like a half inch strip over the hoo-ha. That's the technical term, the hoo-ha.
It kind of looks like it's like you're racing in a thong of some sort.
Yeah, but like the backside of the thong is on the
front
side.
Exactly, yeah, like a reverse thong.
Reverse thong, which I'm sure has a name, but it's not a good one for elite competition. So there were so many great comments. A lot of women were like, do we just race with our labia out now? And it's one of those moments that's like, it's always good to have diversity in rooms, even if, you know, the most basic diversity is gender diversity. Like, and you need more diversity than that because we all have blind spots. And whoever dressed that mannequin clearly had a spot that they missed.
So what you're saying is we need labia diversity in boardrooms. That's exactly what we need. And clearly Nike does not have that.
All labias must be in the C-suite. Yeah. Actually, I coach an athlete that works for Nike and they were so disappointed because they've been trying to do so much work from the inside. And it, to be 100% serious, it is very disappointing to see this type of thing get out there because it's emblematic of a broader issue when it comes to an understanding of, you know, the variance of human existence and stuff. So, to be 100% serious, it was disappointing, but at the same time, quite funny.
It was pretty funny, but it was also a reminder too. Like, I feel like we've come so far in women's sports and then Sometimes you get these reminders and we're like, oh, we still have a really long ways to go. Yeah. But to me, it's almost like it makes how far we've come even more impressive because like at every step of the way, women are overcoming odds of like a labia suit. Yeah. And to be able to do that, I think just illustrates just how far women's sports still have to go in an exciting way.
Well, Nike does a lot of research. Maybe it's more aero. Is that possible? Like, just think about it, because the human body has been optimized over billions of years. You know, we evolved from like amoeba, single-celled organisms, all the way up through like mice, and now we're humans. Maybe the whole reason is because the labia are aerodynamic, and the world just doesn't know. Nike knows, and we're going to get tons of gold medals because of that. What do you think?
Maybe. I feel like the pubes, though, probably don't help that situation.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's
they true. Probably really slow things down. You would need like a very serious wax job down there.
Well, maybe that's what U.S. Olympic Committee is doing. Like, it, notoriously, they don't treat athletes very well. They don't always compensate athletes, at least USA track and field. This whole time, what they've been doing is saving up, Megan. The reason they don't pay athletes is because we've been saving up for the Brazilian wax fund.
Well, I love the like the differences between like running on the track and running on trails because trail athletes, I feel like, are covering their bodies with the most stuff possible. Like,
yeah, you have to stay cool.
There's been a big push to like running in t-shirts or like Courtney DeWalter type shorts or like longer shorts.
Yeah.
And for me, I almost had this existential crisis when I went from a field hockey player in college and then took a fifth year to run track. And I was like, wait, I'm taking a fifth year to run 25 laps around a circle
to do 10K
in a bathing suit. Like, this is so weird. And I feel like we just don't have enough conversations about how weird it is that like we even wear bloomers, let alone a labia suit.
Well, you've come full circle though, because you're wearing the crop top at the race.
That's different though.
Why?
I mean, I just, I don't
I'm know. Challenging you. These are the hard questions, Megan. I'm a journalist.
Well, I also feel like the older I get, the less clothes I wear.
Okay.
Yeah, I might not have done that in college. In college, I would have been like full long sleeve shirt. I just own it. I own my labia. I would not wear, I actually like longer shorts just because it like gives me comfort and freedom.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like if I got, I would be closer to that now than I was back in college.
Okay, when you're 80 and you're showing up for the age group championship, you're actually going to show up to the race in a trench coat.
No, I'm just going to be naked.
I know, but under the tent, at the start, trench coat off, labia out.
Actually, I'm going to be wearing the jacket, like the fur coat that Ryan Gosling was wearing
at
SNL and just be like, it's going to be like, instead of pre-cooling, it's preheating, which I need in my 80s. Yeah. Just unveil the naked suit underneath.
I can't wait for that. On a good note too, I'm starting to recover from the accident a little bit. A lot of people have messaged. Thank you for your really kind messages. It was a tough week in a lot of ways. The most interesting thing after this traumatic accident, which was on April 4th, whenever you're listening to this for context, is that my numbers have gone to total shit.
And what do you mean by numbers?
So my HRV and my resting heart rate in particular, and the Garmin summarizes it in a stress metric like the HRV, and it has gotten worse than it's ever been, including when I had active COVID. And it's kind of interesting to think about how trauma responses have these, you know, long tails to them. And I'm kind of worried about my body. I don't know what to do. I'm going to our magical healing chiropractor to the stars. he actually works with some of the top finishers at Boston Marathon. And I'm like, maybe he can save me because everything's going wrong.
Yeah. What do you think the mechanism is there? So like, you know, I'm sure your body is kind of in a state of inflammation. I wonder if some of that is like brain related, like central fatigue or some sort of like nervous system related mechanism, because you have had, and I think this is interesting, is I don't know if it was almost like the adrenaline post-accident, but post-accident, you're like, I'm fine, I'm good. And then I feel like the concussion symptoms have actually ramped up in the coming days. So do you think the concussion symptoms are related to like these numbers?
Megan, I try to harness the placebo effect. It's like, I'm okay. If I say it enough, I'm going to be okay. And I'm kind of sticking with that now. I mean, you know, doing it now, some of the headaches have started to diminish, which is good. I haven't been repeating myself, have I?
No, you've actually been, you've been funnier too. I feel like it really did like knock, like, I mean, you didn't need neurons knocked into place for comedy, but I feel like they're coming together in a synergistic way.
Well, did you hear about the Team USA jerseys that show labia? Oh wait, I'm repeating myself. Oh no. Just kidding. Yeah, so that was tough. And then the main difficulty for me is that my job involves typing, right? Like writing is my job, whether it's actual writing or it's communicating with athletes. I probably write 10 to 20,000 words every single day in some different context, but I can't write right now because my wrist is all messed up. And so I've been using dictation software, and Megan, it has been a calamity. I'm writing all this and I get like complacent and I start to get confident. And then all of a sudden an athlete will message and be like, what did you mean by this? And it turns out that the dictation software either heard me incorrectly or didn't autocorrect that will ruin my life and get me canceled.
Well, also I feel like the dictation software has a lot of swag. Like I feel like there's some interesting people in the boardroom on the dictation software because it seems like it intentionally changes a few things too.
That's the weirdest
almost
part.
To like, yeah, almost to roll you.
That's the weirdest part. So an unintentional change is the kind of funniest two that I had were rest and recovery, which is how I denote rest days, became breast and recovery a number of times, which is not good when you're writing in female athlete logs.
Well, actually, maybe you were just, Leo is obsessed with these chicken nuggets. And I realized that they're actually just called breast nuggets, which is a really funny way to frame a food source. So maybe you just want breast nuggets and recovery.
I think that's what Nike calls the Team USA jersey tops. We're covering up your breast nuggets. And then number two is I say things like, yay, science, all the time. And what it did change to multiple times was gay science. I'm like, very cool. That's actually a good thing.
Yeah, we're uplifting it. Yes.
Uplifting it, but also a little bit scary. But the weirdest thing is what Megan mentioned is the intentional ones. And I showed her this. I disabled the profanity filter on this dictation app. And when I do that, it autocorrects the profanity to other words. So the biggest
that aren't
one,
even close.
Yeah, yeah. And I've shown Megan this multiple
times. So clearly
times.
It's like intentional. Clearly some coder is in there just being like, ha ha ha, this is hilarious.
So the worst one is I use the word shit a lot because it's kind of a fun thing to throw around to mean stuff, essentially. And a great one is that I would write classic race week shit right there, which was when an athlete going through a little bit of sniffles, feeling a little bit sore, classic. You're probably going to feel that within the next week or two. It's classic. But it autocorrects shit so that it becomes classic race week slut right there. Every single time, shit becomes slut. And it has led to so many terrible situations.
Which is not even close. But my other favorite, you have to share the crushing pitches one.
Okay.
Because that is a podcast favorite. Like we say that on here all the time of like.
And we're going to talk about it in a few minutes.
Yeah. The metaphorical concept of like crushing pitches, of just going for it for the sake of it. Yeah. And then loving pitches in the end. We'll get to that later. Yeah, but what does it do?
Well, this combines the two, crushing and loving, because it changes the word bitches, crushing blowjobs. So have fun. Crushing blowjobs has appeared in multiple athlete logs.
Actually, as I'm sitting here, maybe that needs to be my mindset for Canyon's 100K.
Why?
We're just up for like, you know, I feel like crushing bitches is kind of like my race mentality, whether it's like a half marathon or a 50K, which is like much more within the domain of what I've done. But I've never done 100K. So maybe I need to be up for like new adventures that involve a lot of slurping.
I'm going to, okay, good. I was going to redirect that to say you're going to be giving blowjobs to liquid gels.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yes.
Perfect. Perfect. I uplift that 100,000%.
Okay. But in all seriousness, how are you dealing with this emotionally? Because I mean, I feel like getting trucked by a Subaru, being unconscious for 30 minutes is a big life deal. And I feel like I'm still processing it in the sense that like sometimes at 3 a.m. I'll wake up and I'll be like, what happened? Yeah. And then also my brain goes to the fact of like, what could have happened? Yeah. And it goes there a lot, just like randomly. Like sometimes I'll be running and honestly, I think I'm like, oh my God, how terrible would it be to not have you here? Because I think that is a reality when you get hit by a car on a bike.
Who would make macaroni and cheese?
Yeah, I know.
Who would do it?
I know.
You're not going to boil water.
You know, I go to the logistics. I'm like, damn, single parenting is so hard.
Who's going to file your taxes?
I know.
You would be in jail. You would be zero parenting, Leo.
I know. I don't even go to crushing blowjobs. Just going to But my point is like, have you had that emotional feeling? And like, what are you, how are you working through that?
I just cut you off there because, you know, I didn't want you to get emotional on here because yesterday when you told me about this, coming back from your run, you did start getting emotional that you thought about raising Leo alone because I was monitoring Leo while you were out running.
You were monitoring Leo.
Monitoring. Yes. I monitor him. It's a science experiment to see what happens if you give a kid a lot of love and no rules and a lot of macaroni and cheese and maybe too many cookies. And, you know, he just screams dada constantly. And he's clearly like, you know, pretty into me.
He loves you so much. And I think that's like one of the biggest things I have. I'm like, what would Leo do without you? Like he just literally walks around the house
Yeah. I'm starting to get a little emotional. Yeah.
No. We've almost never done that in podcast history.
Yeah. Sorry. I think honestly, the Leo stuff didn't really pop into my brain too much at first, you know?
When you said you went down, you're like, I didn't even think of Leo.
Yeah. I thought of you,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I think it was almost because while I understand the intellectual possibility that I would have died, I didn't really, really fully comprehend just how close it was.
Yeah.
And going back to the race or the crash site and seeing, you know, my blood there and just seeing how far I was launched and stuff, it's like, you know, I was really close to making so Leo doesn't grow up with a dad, you know?
Yeah.
Or, you know, until you remarry.
Yeah. No.
I gave you potential podcast hosts, I gave you a list of 10 names of people who you're calling up the next day for dates, Megan. You're going to take them, you're going to go get pizza, you're going to see how many slices they eat, and that's going to be the evaluation.
It was ordered by PR. It was like Clayton Young.
Exactly. No. Clayton Young has enough kids.
But I feel like it's hard. Sorry. Actually, that's my dream.
That is true.
I want to have like 8 kids. So
you're going to convert to Mormonism.
I know.
Or the LDS church and just have a whole brood.
That's exactly what I want. But I almost feel like it is this hard place though, because what you're going through is also really hard. Like recovery from a concussion is nonlinear. Like we don't know. It's not like a bone that heals and you're like, okay, within 6 weeks, we're pretty confident this bone is going to be like, you know, the fracture is going to be callous. It's going to be healed back together.
Yeah.
The brain has this like very nonlinear progression. And so it's almost weird because I feel like we have this like amazing place of gratitude. You're still dealing with like very real and frustrating shit, including like the stank in your underarms because you can't clean yourself. Yeah. And how is that dichotomy? Because it has to be strange where you're in this place of gratitude. And then like, it's also kind of a shitty existence too.
I think the hard part now has been that I do see it's going to be a long process. Hopefully mentally it'll be okay. But physically I've been running and I posted a couple of videos of doing hill repeats in my sling. And it's like, you know, I'm trying to really uplift myself because I know how tough this is. I'm expressing my toughness, you know? But I also understand that like, this is going to be a long road from the most fit I've ever been to, you know, a lot tougher place. And I'll probably get injured in this cycle, you know, because I've been compensating because I'm running with one fucking arm and my brain hurts all the time. And, but what I keep trying to remind myself is, was it the art of kintsugi or something like that, where, you know, the porcelain breaks.
Oh yes. Yeah.
And then you build it back together. And I broke to a certain extent, not a ton, but enough. And I hope what comes back together will be stronger. It's just hard to be in the moment where you're still gathering the glue, not quite putting the pieces back together yet.
Well, it's kind of a lot like our TV that's like shattered into like a million directions. And what's coming back together is actually just Emma Bates like at the front of the men's race.
Or more appropriately, that we're going to get a new TV, much like you are going to slide into Clayton Young's DMs. All right, let's go on to the Boston Marathon. What do you think about that?
Let's do it. Oh, I'm so excited to talk about this. Yeah. It is fresh in our minds. It just happened.
So we'll keep it kind of quick.
No, we're not keeping it quick.
Well, we have so many great topics today.
Okay, but Boston Marathon is the coolest topic. We have differentiators. Yeah. I feel like you would be this excited as I am about like Western States or trail race. But I feel like sometimes
or baseball.
Or yeah, I know. Why are you like a negative Nilly on Boston Marathon?
Well, I promised myself I would not do road races back like a decade ago. And I think sometimes that translates a little bit to how I consume the sport. I'm actually more into track, interestingly.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is.
Yeah, steeplechase maybe?
Steeplechase. Steeplechase is basically like trail running.
Maybe actually we should have a check-in about this. Is it because of the labia suits? They're running in underwear.
No, it is not like that at all. I uplift full coverage. Okay, so let's go through maybe 8 different types of thoughts here. The first is the marathon man's winner, Cisse Lema. It was absolutely remarkable what he did. So first, he's coming back from 2 DNFs at this race and then a 30th place finish. So he's had 3 poor races for him. But since then, he's become a 2:01:48 marathoner, one of the 4 fastest men in history. And within 5K of the race, he decided to do a breakaway at the Boston Marathon. And he was doing this with like 4:20-something mile pace early on. That is so courageous, so wild, and it never works on a good weather year.
So courageous. And I felt like you were bringing the Boston Marathon skepticism and doubt into his race because you were like, oh man, this is going to implode. This is going to be bad. Just wait for Heartbreak Hill. And it never happened.
You would assume though, because to do that, you have to be pushing so hard because everyone in that field is incredibly fast. And so he was clearly pushing hard, but somehow didn't fade. And I think part of it gets back to the conditions, which they had a nice little tailwind this year. It wasn't too hot, though. It did get a lot warmer later on. And he clearly ran within himself and was really good strategically, because one of the most interesting things I saw him do, which is relevant to all listeners, is yes, he would grab his bottles at every aid. So every single aid, he was grabbing a bottle, which is awesome. But then he'd also grab the little Dixie cups. Like he was one of us mere mortals. And then he would drink those. I'm like, that's a lot of good hydration and cooling. So he was also dumping on himself.
It's also hard to drink from the Dixie cups too. So if you're running a marathon and you haven't practiced drinking from a cup on the fly,
it's impossible.
It's really hard.
I would bring like a little handheld or something, because I can't do it. I don't know how people ever drink from a Dixie cup.
You'd be running the Boston Marathon in the front pack with a handheld.
Yeah. It's the one time I'd wear a vest. I don't know how, I mean, I seriously don't know. But the good thing is the front pack gets bottle service. And I think bottle service makes a big difference. So incredible what he did. So courageous. He held on to win by over a minute.
Though it was getting close down to the wire. And I feel like the interesting thing about TV coverage is even if there's like a 400 meter gap between first and second place, it looks so close on the TV. And there's like,
they call it foreshortening.
Yeah, foreshortening. And my anxious brain goes to that foreshortening and I'm like, oh my God, he can't do it. And it was really cool to see him do it. But I do think that if the race was like 3 kilometers longer, maybe even 2 kilometers longer, that he wouldn't have been able to hang on. And I think it emphasizes that was perfect strategy, but that it was also courageous and risky at the same time.
I think we'll start seeing this more and more. We've talked about this in trails, people going off the front early and really pushing it relatively early in races.
He was Heather Jacksoning it.
Yeah, exactly.
And yes. I think it's like, you know, he's DNF twice at Boston.
Yeah.
And like sometimes that doesn't work, but sometimes I feel like to do what he just did, you have to do that. Like that has to be in your history. And so, I mean, I feel like you're stepping up and taking big swings.
You gonna do that at Canyons?
No. I don't think I've earned the right to do that. Yeah. I will be going out hopefully towards the front, but
yeah.
I don't think I'll be doing it. I don't think I'll be Heather Jacksoning it.
No, you're absolutely not. I just wanted to make sure we're on the same page. Yeah. We haven't really talked about race strategy yet, but I did want to pop it on to you on the podcast. Okay, so top American was CJ Albertson, podcast favorite. We love CJ. He trains so hard. But an interesting wrinkle here is he finished 7th. And to get the 3rd qualifying spot for the Paris Olympics for the marathon, which wouldn't have gone to him, it would have gone to Leonard Greer, he would have needed to finish top 5. Super weird qualification system.
I know. I actually don't love that. Yeah. I mean, I like that because there's like some team camaraderie going on there, but it's just not like, relevant. It seems weird. It's like, this doesn't actually matter in the context of the Olympic marathon.
And it's like, the US should send 3 athletes. It's so weird that they develop these convoluted ranking systems, but good job for CJ. His first, I think, official marathon under 210. So that's amazing and just inspiring as hell, given how he's like an ultimate blue collar training athlete.
Oh yeah. We were talking about the fact that he was boiling water to create a sense of humidity in his pain cave. And then we talked about it and then he bought a humidifier, which I thought was very cool. I was like, is this the swap effect?
No, I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think CJ listens.
No, I don't think so.
Next up, Helen O'Beery winning the women's race. Absolute superstar. I think it's her 2nd win in a row. Her form is the most distinctive thing about her. She runs and her stride is absolutely perfect, but her arms are totally different than anybody else on the planet.
She's like fighting the air with her arms. Yeah. Is that how you would describe it?
Yeah, just giving uppercuts to someone that's kind of at eye level. And then when she opens up her stride, it is wild. And we get to see her all the time here in Boulder because she trains here. She's so kind, just a wonderful person. But she runs like this, even kind of at normal paces.
Oh yeah. I see her running like 8-9 minute pace sometimes, just running with these uppercuts. And I'm like, that's how I want to seize the day. I want to Helen O'Beery the day.
Yeah. Though, you know, our T-Rex logo doesn't really support the big old arms like that, but it works for her. And she's one of the best athletes ever to do it, you know, in GOAT contention, greatest of all time contention. And it's really cool to see her fly.
And I think this was actually the first time in 2 decades that a woman has won back-to-back Boston marathons. And so it shows how hard it is to come and do this. And I think actually the women's race started to be a little bit more tactical at the start. And I think it played right into Helen O'Beery's hands because she's a fast 800 runner, 1500 meter runner, and she has the closing speed. And so I was so excited actually to see it be a tactical race because I was like, oh, this is feeding into Helen O'Beery.
Yeah. So next up, 4th story here, a shout out to Edna Kiplagat, who at 43 was 3rd place. So cool. And it's really inspiring to think about, especially as the distances get longer, the potential for aging to be actually a benefit can be really high. So Edna's been one of the best forever. But to see her do this, pretty damn remarkable and very exciting. We get to see her all the time in Boulder too. And kindest person. And just so happens that most of the times I see her, she's running like 9-minute pace, which just points out that like easy training matters for everybody.
Shuffling is where it's at.
Yeah.
And it's kind of wild. So last year she struggled at Boston. She was 30th and she was dealing with sickness. And I feel like a lot of people wrote her off because she's like 43. She was 30th last year at Boston. And I think it goes to show that you just never know an athlete's story. Like she didn't really share that she was sick, I think, until like a couple of weeks after the race. And so it just, I thought it was so cool for her to come back as third. But did you see that Lemma actually had gray hair?
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was really excited when
the men's winner,
when he finished, because like every once in a while, actually, I don't think I have like many gray hairs, but every once in a while, I feel like I see one in the mirror and I'm like type one muscle fibers.
What I want to know is, did he have the stank? Because like, that's where I would feel seen. I'm fortunate. I've avoided gray hairs.
We both have. Yeah. I mean, they're probably coming for us like all at once.
It's pure genetics, right? It's just like luck of the draw. And also gray hair is amazing, but
it's type one muscle fibers.
My stank would come through the TV. So I want to see myself represented. Diversity. Stank diversity. Okay. Next up, Emma Bates, top American, also trains out here in Boulder. What's in the water?
Yeah. Big Boulder representation. I do feel like Boulder has some amazing Boston training ground hills. Yes. Like we have these gravel rolling roads out here that really approximate the Boston course.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's going to like just correlate with Paris as well.
Yeah.
So the Paris Olympic Marathon has like 1400 feet of vert.
Yeah.
You were telling me, I think there's some 13% grades on the course, which is wild.
Yeah. Multiple times they hit the same grade. 1400 feet is going to be insane in the heat. I think the Paris Olympic Marathon is going to be one of the coolest races we've ever seen.
And it's going to play like a are you going to be excited about a road marathon?
I am. Basically, you put some vert in my road races. I'm excited. I want to see what happens. In fact, we should somehow get Grayson Murphy bib into that race.
Oh, that would be so fun.
Wouldn't it be insane?
That would be wild.
Yeah. That would be so fun. So Paris is going to be wild. And I think this type of race really selects for it. And I was so hopeful that Emma Bates would come back from having to miss the Olympic trials due to injury and rocket. And she ended up finishing top American, but I'll be curious to see how she responds to it, because I think on some level, she thought that maybe this was going to be the day of that breakthrough performance-wise.
And you could see that in her strategy too. Like she had multiple points where she was out in the lead, like 4 or 5 seconds ahead of the group with a big, like full wattage smile going on, just seeming to like really-
It was so inspiring.
Enjoy it and soak it in. And I mean, top American is a huge accomplishment, but I do agree with you that she was probably looking for something a little bit more there.
And so I heard a really interesting interview with her before the race, where when she was injured, she said she was training up to 24 hours per week on the bike.
What?
Yeah.
That's a lot for a runner.
That's so much training.
Also, I think, and I don't think I've seen her on like a road bike or a gravel bike or a mountain bike. I think she was doing that indoors, which is even more mind-blowing to think about 24 hours a week on a stationary bike.
It just points out the mental toughness of some of these athletes. I think some people say, oh, it's just talent. It's like, these people work hard. Like if it wasn't running, Emma Bates would be the best lawyer you've ever seen or something like that. You know, something that requires a lot of time investment, because that's just wild. But I also think, you know, maybe some of the fade is because when you are doing the cross training focus, going into something like a marathon, it's much more difficult mechanically, right? Like aerobically, she's fine. And strength-wise in her muscles, she's fine. But the actual impact of the event, particularly over hills, that's going to add up over time, especially at those types of paces.
And she has had a long, she actually posted and shared the progression and chart of her build. And it was beautiful. It was like this linear line of mileage building and then, you know, dropping down into her taper. And I think it was a nice, long, beautiful build, but I do think it's probably hard coming off that year just to have that like background mileage in your tank.
Yeah. And she's another one. So kind.
She's so nice.
We get to see her all the time.
She actually flew by me like 2 weeks ago when I was out running at the res, and she was probably running 5:20 pace. And honestly, I don't get passed all that often. I was like, holy shit, what's happening? It was so cool.
Were any words exchanged?
Oh yeah. I was like, you're amazing.
Yeah. She's probably focused though. Yeah.
No, she gave me like a thumbs up.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. She's great.
A thumbs up from Emma Bates. That goes a
long
way.
Big deal. Yeah.
Better than like a 5-star review for the podcast. Okay. Last one for running here is Des Linden. Ran such an interesting race. So she dropped back early when the pace accelerated, but then when it slowed down, she actually joined the lead pack and passed people and was leading for a while and then still rebounded for an incredible race. What an athlete. Des Linden is a superstar.
She's a mental monster too. Yeah. To be able to, I mean, it takes hard work to close on a pack. Granted, the tailwind is beneficial as you're trying to like bridge up to a pack. She did something interesting though by, you know, and I think it does make sense, is that like when you're having that acceleration to catch a pack that you keep it going.
Yeah.
And so she accelerated out into the lead, but I actually wonder if it motivated the pack. It was kind of when the pack switched on and started turning gears, and then she did wind up falling off the back of that. Is if it had been smarter to sit in and tuck in the back of the pack and not make it so well known that you just bridged?
I don't think so. I think she's just trying to run the fastest time she can.
Yeah.
She knows that will be the best performance, because she knows that the race is going to detonate relatively quickly. Like at some point, people like Helen Obiri are going to attack, and they did. And it just so happened to coincide with that. But from a podcast perspective, the part that might be the toughest for us, as much as we root for her and want her to crush, is that she got an organic podcast plug for their amazing episode podcast that she does with Kara Goucher. And it's called Nobody Asked Us. I'm giving it a plug.
I know. Look at us.
Every single week, it's the episode that we compete with for the top running podcast in the US and Canada. And last week, we were able to get top podcast in Canada for a little bit and beat them. And then she comes back and gets a plug on ESPN. We're going to get freaking trucked for as long as it goes in the future.
Okay, but bridge to the front pack and run at the front, and she probably deserves it. But what we should have you do is just go with a swap singlet and like run an all-out 5K at the start of the Boston Marathon and do the same thing in the name of podcast advertising.
So work all play podcast. Okay, let's get on to studies. But first, before we do that, hey, some work all play. Give it 5 stars and click follow wherever you listen. Really helps other people find it. Really great for the podcast, and it means so much to us.
Yeah, thank you so much for doing that. And give Des and Kara a 5-star review too. We're suckers.
No, they deserve it. It's a great podcast. I listen to it, and
actually, they're great. I love the like back and forth banter they have. Yeah. And it's pretty impressive. I mean, podcasting takes a substantial amount of work, and to see like Des.
Okay, Megan, stop. Let's stop promoting it now. That was enough.
You're like, enough, no more.
All right. First study today is a new one on carb ingestion that is really fascinating just to give some basis for a lot of the things we talk about, because often we know how these processes of consuming carbs translate to performance, but the exact mechanisms are sometimes a little bit weakly understood outside of just substrate utilization. So this gives a neuromuscular reason.
And I think sometimes when we think about these neuromuscular reasons, we try to like think about, okay, is this like peripheral versus central fatigue? And so peripheral fatigue is essentially fatigue that occurs like within the muscles themselves.
Yes.
Whereas central fatigue is more of a mechanism of like the brain and spinal cord and how that impacts the body's ability to recruit muscle fibers. And so when you think about fatigue, you're like, okay, is the substrate of like carbs, is it impacting like the peripheral fatigue or central fatigue or both? And like, what are the mechanisms? And I love that this study kind of looks at this a little bit.
Yeah. And so what we call fatigue resistance or durability, ability to put out power later in events, we always tied it towards central fatigue for the most part. And I think this study might actually back up some of those rationales. So the reason we really want to talk about it is it had a wild protocol. It took 12 participants doing knee extensions at 20% of maximum voluntary contraction until they reached about 60% of their initial values of like how their muscles were activating. So people were just sitting there in my mind and just doing leg extensions.
Over and over again. Yeah. I feel like they should just like attach it to a Zwift or something. So Zwift is like the virtual indoor trainer that we use, and it should just like allow them to feel like they're propelling themselves forward.
Yeah.
But okay, my brain is a little twisted because it goes to the idea that I would love to be a participant in the study, just doing like knee extensions over and over and over again.
Yeah, you're a weirdo. I feel like that's why people should be scared of you at Canyons, because you have something in your brain that applies a little bit more directly than me, because I hear this and I'm like, absolutely not. I would tap out after 5 minutes, no matter how much these researchers are paying me. This is a nightmare. So every 15 minutes, they evaluated central and peripheral fatigue using the interpolated twitch technique. That sounds pretty fun.
It sounds hardcore. They also give it an acronym too of ITT.
Oh.
And ITT is something that I use in epidemiology called intention to treat analysis.
Oh.
And you know what? It's way cooler to be in the interpolated twitch technique. So I'm going to like unsee ITT everywhere else now.
You know what it reminds me of?
What?
Is back in the 90s, one of those commercials they had on all the time was for the ITT Technical Institute. Like on ESPN, where you would go there and I don't know, learn welding or something. Or not learn welding, just have them take your money.
You learn how to twitch.
Yeah. So lots of things applying to that acronym. And then they also looked at something called electrically evoked torque. So pretty wild study design here. And then they had two different conditions. One where the athletes ingested carbs at 85 grams per hour, so right around our food doping levels, or placebo with no carbs at all.
And what they found was that the group that took in carbs actually increased the time to failure on the leg extensions by 30 minutes.
Yeah. And we're talking almost 2 hours of leg extensions for the carb group.
Okay, which is so cool. That I would love wild. To do leg extensions for 2 hours watching the Boston Marathon.
What a nightmare. I have trouble doing like any of these things for more than like 30 seconds. Like planks for me are the ultimate example of something I can't do. In fact, when I woke up in the hospital, I was like, oh, my wrist is broken. Thank God. I can't do planks. I have an excuse now. This is wonderful.
See, it's funny. For you, it's planks. And for me, it's push-ups.
Yeah.
I like, for whatever reason, push-ups are just very uncomfortable. I do them, but they're very uncomfortable for my body.
You do them, but what's the caveat?
I do them on my knees.
You do them on your knees? It's fine.
I know, but it's funny. I could do like, I mean, honestly, I can do like 200 push-ups on my knees.
Yeah.
It's just more comfortable to do them on my knees than it is to do them like on my feet.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I like it. Interesting, Megan.
I mean, I can do them, but it's like,
uh-huh. Just keep, I'm like, tell me more. How does this make you feel? How does your childhood influence your ability to do push-ups? No, all push-ups are hard and I don't do any, so I can't really talk. But here's a great quote from the authors. Based on our results, we conclude that improved endurance performance is possibly associated with elevations in interstitial glucose levels rather than prevention of hypoglycemia per se, and that the, quote, excess carbohydrates might serve as a valuable fuel for the neuromuscular system.
Well, I love, so as a component of the study, they had athletes wearing continuous glucose monitors, and they were looking at these interstitial levels of glucose.
Yeah.
And what they found actually is that it's not just preventing hypoglycemia, so low glucose levels, it's actually having higher glucose levels on board to be able to help the body in terms of preventing neuromuscular fatigue is what they think is like the driver. And I think that's so cool, is it's like, no, we actually want adequate carbohydrate levels and like higher glucose levels within the bloodstream.
Yeah, it's about our brains too. That's the wild part, is I think often the criticism of high carbohydrate intakes are saying, well, our muscles don't actually need that much most of the time, which is admittedly true, especially at lower effort levels. But the difference is the carbs that might be, quote, excess, just go to making it easier on your brain, which improves your actual fatigue resistance, which is what matters in these longer events. So even if for some reason, like you don't need the carbs, you need them for performance. And my guess is that this is what we see in ultras a lot, is that the performance levels, like intensity wise, are pretty low for some people, but even the people that aren't pushing themselves in the race need to take on as many carbs as they can, essentially, because that's what lets them actually push later in events. Otherwise, the brain shuts down the body before the body needs to shut down.
And I think it's even more relevant in situations in which you have more cognitive demand, like whether you're like nervous for a race, and so your brain is firing on many cylinders, or even for us, like after we, like sometimes we run or we train after we podcast, and those are my hardest training sessions. Like
this, I'm just putting two and two together.
I'm coming to the point sometimes where like post podcast, I'm like, I have to shuffle, because I feel like our brains are utilizing so much glucose as we're recording the podcast and putting energy into this, that when I go to exercise after the podcast, I feel terrible.
It feels like there's almost no way I can refuel well enough unless I have a full meal and then wait.
Yes. Yeah. And so it's like, I feel like it gets the idea of like the cognitive demand is actually really relevant for thinking about performance and thinking about fueling.
Do we need gels during the podcast?
We actually, well, last week I took a Precision 100 milligram calf before the podcast.
Okay, but maybe during though too.
Oh, that'd be so fun.
Maybe that's what we need.
Can we do it on the fly? Like, you know, like when you're running, you like practice taking a gel on a downhill.
Yeah,
you gotta practice like slurping right after a joke. The timing of it really matters.
Hope you make that other person laugh, because otherwise gonna be an awkward edit. One final thing that's interesting about the study is that neuromuscular fatigue improved at each phase. So every 15 minutes, this wasn't just at a stage of depletion. This was throughout. Points out again, fueling is magic. And that's why we partnered with The Feed. They are the official presenting sponsor of the podcast. So if you want to support the podcast, go to thefeed.com/swap, S-W-A-P. There's a link in the show notes too. And there you get $80 free just for signing up. If you go click claim reward, they have everything you could ever want at that website. They're an awesome company. And we totally, you know, are behind their mission.
I feel like I'm constantly learning about carbs from their website. I'm like, show me new types of carbs. It's the best type of shopping. But I feel like actually the other day I realized the number of supplements they have on their website and their ability to break down supplements is super helpful too. So I take collagen in the mornings. Honestly, I don't even know if it does anything, but you know what? At least it makes like my hair and my nails a little fly.
I was about to say, you look radiant. Could that be it?
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if I look radiant, but you know, if it is, maybe it's the collagen. But I take the stuff that we get at Whole Foods, which is like Vital Proteins. And I had the realization the other day, I was like, oh shit, this is not NSF, like safe for sports certified in terms of the ingredients. And so The Feed told me that Momentous has collagen that's safe for sport. And so I ordered it. And so I feel like the ability to order supplements, the ability to order carbs, all things on The Feed is great.
So thefeed.com/swap, S-W-A-P. You're going to get tons of bonuses there. And we're going to announce some fun things for people that have signed up. Okay, on to the next one. This is actually connected and points out some weird things we don't really understand about the brain. This is on ketones and cognitive performance, another wild study design.
Adding to the number of studies that we're seeing on ketones. And what I like about the study is they did it in solely female athletes.
Yeah.
Very cool. So they took 12 trained female athletes and they gave them a baseline cognitive exam. And then what they had them do is they did 6x5 minute efforts.
At pretty low intensity.
At low intensity. It was like 40% of
up to like 65%.
40% to 65% of the max watts, and then having them gradually increase over that time. And then after doing that, they had them do a 10 kilometer time trial. And then they took a cognitive exam at the end of this. Yeah. And there were two groups. So there was a group that consumed carbs only, and then a group that consumed carbs and ketones. And they were looking at the differences between the two groups.
So this is really interesting to me because we are not for ketones during or before exercise. Like in the small places where we're really open to it, it's post-exercise because that's what the studies show. So what I'm interested here is to see, one, how does it change performance? That to me is the most interesting. And what they found is that there was no change in performance, which kind of backs up with what we've seen where in general, even on longer events, you're not seeing performance change from ketone ingestion. In fact, on some shorter events, it can actually reduce performance in the studies that we've seen so far.
Which quite frankly makes me happy because yeah, I don't want athletics to be this indicator of like how are athletes responding to ketones. Like I want athletics to be much more like level playing field and not to have ketones come into the equation. But I don't know, if you dove into the figures, what was interesting actually was that the group that consumed ketones did have slightly lower lactate and blood glucose levels. Which is interesting. So you might think that, okay, if we took more than 12 athletes and started to replicate the study design, that there might be something there to look at.
Or if we had the ketone athletes fuel more.
Yes.
Because that's one thing I've heard about the people that do use ketones during events is it only works if you're doing wild carb fueling. Like if you do ketones and limited carbs during exercise, you have what happened to me the one time I tried or two times I tried it, which is lights the fuck out. Like I was done.
Which is wild. Like standing on the side of Magnolia Road being like, I cannot get home.
Which doesn't happen to me.
Yes. But I think like if you brought in more athletes to look at the study design, those results, which are not significant, but have a small finding, might actually become significant in time. The other thing that they found too was, there actually was a small difference. So you could see on the figures that the group that consumed ketones did have slightly lower RPE across all the different, so across the 6x5 minutes and then the 10-kilometer time trial as well. It just also did not reach significance because it was a little bit smaller.
It doesn't equate with performance changes, you know, distinction without a difference to me.
Yeah, but I feel like changes in RPE, if you magnified that out and plotted it out, like maybe over an ultra, it would.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, so it's funny because, you know, I'm the ultimate ketone skeptic and here I am being like, oh, maybe there is something small in these results.
Well, I think especially when combined with the main finding is that it improved cognitive performance. So on the post-exercise cognitive test, athletes were scoring anywhere from 5% to 14% better. And I think that that might be the interesting next phase for thinking about these types of supplements and carbs and how they all interact is how does it impact the brain? And what we know from the previous study, how does the brain impact fatigue? That's a really open question. But if this is being used in places like ultras or the cycling peloton, probably what we're thinking is almost more cognitive performance and the central fatigue rather than peripheral fatigue and like energy substrate utilization.
Do you know what I got sad about?
What?
I am past my test taking era.
Okay.
Like I'm no longer taking tests. I'm no longer doing homework.
You're sad about that?
You know what? Sometimes I do have this like nostalgia for taking tests. Isn't that strange?
What the fuck is wrong with
you? I know. I'm a weird...
knee extensions and taking standardized tests?
I know. If you put the two together, basically like if we combine these two studies, I'd be so down for it. Taking cognitive tests and doing knee extensions. No, I mean, I don't miss like studying and like all everything that comes with it or doing school.
You just miss the affirmation of getting 100% on every test.
No. Sometimes it's fun to just sit down and be like, I'm here for the challenge.
Yeah.
But I would have taken ketones like before the MCAT.
Interesting.
Yeah, with carbs. So like I feel like go for an easy run, like have a high carb meal, take ketones and be ready to crush a test.
Whew, I don't know about that. I mean, I'm not sure.
But my brain always feels really good after I take ketones. Yeah. I feel like sometimes I'm coaching, I'm just like flying. I'm like, oh, this training is good.
Yeah. So just a place to keep an open mind. We're trying to bring every study that comes out in this area because it is something we have teed up before and said, a couple times per week, taking post-exercise one serving of ketones seems like it might improve blood metrics. But we've also started to see, so I've mentioned a lot of positive stories. I've also started to see a few that athletes say it does not work for them for whatever reason. So be open to it and let's see what happens. Lots of flexibility in training theory.
Can I add one more really cool thing on ketones?
Go for it.
Okay, so what they found actually was that these slight changes in lactate levels were more predominant at the lower efforts.
Okay.
And so their theory actually, which I had not heard before, which I think is fascinating, is that the elevated beta hydroxybutyrate, which is a ketone byproduct, actually competitively inhibits lactate transporters.
Yeah.
But the problem is that when lactate gets too high, it outcompetes. And so when your lactate levels are lower, the ketones might actually have more effect.
Oh, well, it makes sense that they'd be used in ultras.
Yes, exactly. And so I was like, well, maybe these like really, really long, slow events where lactate levels are lower, that we might actually start to see something with ketones.
You know what we really need is...
Again, this is a hypothesis by the researchers. Yeah. And so like we need a lot more studies to look at this, but I do think there might be something at lower levels.
We don't need studies. What we need is to know what the cycling peloton's doing.
That's true.
And no one talks about it really openly. They all kind of hint at it and say random things, but that would give us a lot of insight. And unfortunately, I doubt we're going to get it because they all have secrets.
Where is Tadej Pogačar on that list of men? Yeah. How does he compare to Clayton Young?
He's like the dream school.
He's out of my league.
No, Megan. Yes, he does have a partner, I think, and she's in the cycling peloton. But.
Do you think I could beat her?
Do I think you could?
No, she's in the, she's I'm just a pro
saying,
cyclist.
That 89-year-old woman that hit me. Maybe she goes to Slovenia. I'm just saying. And then maybe she still has a license in Slovenia. And I'm just saying, I don't want to go into too many details, but you know what I'm saying. All right, let's go on to Parker Valby's cross training. This is a wild look at how training theory can be different. So I think as we look at this, let's take a step back and just remember, this is not a one size fits all approach. This is a one size fits Parker freaking Valby approach. She's incredibly talented and she's used cross training to become not just an NCAA champion, but she just set the NCAA record in both the 5K and the 10K. She won her 10K, the first 10K, by like 2 minutes or 3 minutes. At a recent track race, she ran 30 minutes and 50 seconds.
Which was an NCAA record by like almost 20 seconds, I think. And to do that while running solo is pretty wild. Like if she had gone, so recently there was this Sound running 10K. If she had gone and done that where there was like much faster times, I'm really curious how that would have impacted her overall 10K time. It was wild.
Maybe, you know, she clearly gets a lot of joy being alone when training.
Actually, there are people like that. Like, I wonder, Emma Bates was like at some points really starting to pop off the front of the Boston Marathon pack. And I was like, maybe this is where she psychologically thrives.
Maybe. But with Parker Valby, what we're about to get into is the ultimate introvert training style. So she goes to the student gym because at the student gym at University of Florida, they have an ARC trainer. And the ARC trainer has arm movement as well. Whereas the ones that are at the student center or the student athlete center don't have the arm bars.
So she's essentially going to like the rec center. So they have a professional student athlete training center and she chooses not to go there. Yeah. And goes to the place where it's just like the regular college students goes to use this ARC trainer.
Could you imagine? Walking in, it reminds me so much of meeting you and seeing you use the elliptical. And I went to the student center with you and it was one of the grossest, most impressive things I've ever seen.
How does it compare to armpit stank?
Armpit stank. I mean, this was the embodiment of existence stank. This was existential stank brought to life. Everyone just moved away from you. No one was on any machine within a 10-foot radius and you probably broke it. It was impressive.
Sweat flying everywhere.
But it also worked for you. And it points out that maybe there is something to this. So her general structure of training is that she's doing 4 to 7 hours of work on the ARC trainer each week. This involves a mix of doubles, longer singles, usually 60 to 75 minutes, and then doing most of her running sessions as kind of like more hard or moderate sessions. And here's a quote from the Runner's World article that talked about this. It was really wonderfully written. It was by Sarah Jorge Butler. And she goes hard. She sweats like crazy and doesn't bring a towel. Puddles form on the floor beneath her. She also doesn't hydrate during workouts. There's not a water bottle holder in the front of the machine, she said. It's behind the machine, and I can't be bothered to turn around. And then one more something from a little later in the article. Also, she's going hard all the time. She says her average heart rate is higher when she's on the ARC trainer than it is when she runs. Few people can put that much effort in on a single piece of equipment day in and day out. That's what makes her an outlier.
Well, how do you think this translates to her training intensity distribution? Because if you look at the rest of her week, so she like, for example, so like Monday, she does 2x60 minutes on the ARC trainer.
Yeah.
Tuesday, she does a hard run workout. Wednesday, ARC trainer. Yeah. Thursday, run workout. Friday seems like kind of an easy run. And then Saturday, either ARC or rest, and Sunday, long run. Her runs also seem to be at higher intensity.
Yeah.
And then everything she does on the ARC trainer is at high intensity. Uh-huh. So where would you put her training intensity distribution? I mean, it's probably like 75% Z3 or Z4.
It's a fucked up and perverse intensity distribution.
Yeah. I like it.
So
yeah.
I think it's a little different than that, actually, because my guess is that she's so aerobically efficient.
That's true. That like some of this is actually in Z2, on a 5-zone model.
Z1, Z2, and then it wanders up into Z3, Z4 at the end.
Okay. Well, her sweating puddles doesn't sound like Z1 to me.
Oh, I mean, it is though, because the student center, think about it. It's like warm. It's Florida.
I don't think so.
It's Florida. It's
I
don't so
think
hot.
So. I think it's Z2, Z3.
Yeah. I mean, she's so aerobically efficient that I think that this is where running theory differs a little bit from the potential of cycling and cross training theory, in the sense that these events have no impact on the body. The body can get very good at lactate shuttling at the top end of Z2. So while I think, you know, her heart rate is often, you know, higher on this than running, my guess is it's more top end Z2, low end Z3, but she's so good that she pushes hard as shit to do that. And that's the cool thing about cycling and cross training modalities, is that by pushing into Z2, there's so much mechanical strain. Like the muscles themselves are doing so much more work than the aerobic system usually, that you're getting a massive training stimulus, but without the breakdown that would come from running at those paces.
Well, I often find that like when I go and do elliptical workouts, I haven't done an elliptical workout in a long time, actually, as I'm sitting here reflecting on that.
We had to prioritize.
Yeah, running's been going well.
And biking.
Biking's been going well. I love my gravel biking. But I feel like when I go and then like go out for a run, the resistance on my legs feels so different. And I imagine that's something that Parker Valby is feeling, is that the, you know, she's bumping up what they said to like often 30 to 40% of the max resistance, which is pretty high. And so to do that and then go out to run, it probably feels relatively easy for her to run.
We need an arch trainer world championship.
We do. Oh my gosh, she would crush it.
I want to put her versus you.
Oh, she would crush me so bad.
Megan, no, you're a freak. You're a freak. If you train for it,
Parker Valby is the ultimate freak.
She's a freak at running, right? We don't know what her arch training is. And I know this is out there. This is really putting it out there. Megan, but you as a cyclist, your watts are like Olympic level.
Actually, you just made my day this week you went downstairs to ride my bike downstairs in the paint cave.
One-handed.
Because your bike is messed up. And for the longest time, I've just like thought I'm like not as good of an indoor rider as I am an outdoor rider. Like I have a power meter on my outdoor bike. I have a power meter on my indoor bike. And I'm like, gee, I just ride so much better outdoors. Well, it turns out you're like, Megan, your power meter is messed up indoors. It was the best day, like 30 watts difference.
Probably at least. I mean, all I'm saying is you versus Parker, arc trainer competition, I bet it would be pretty epic. And I bet our pay-per-view numbers would go off.
No, the only thing I would beat her in is puddles of sweat. Yeah. So sweat a lot.
I think the big lesson here is that when you're cross training, it's actually okay to push a little harder. I would say not into Z3, Z4, but Z2 is your friend. Like cycling training theory, speaking of Tadej Pogačar, what UAE Team Emirates does that he rides for is a ton of top end Z2 riding within the context of their weeks, which for advanced athlete means you're pushing a little bit. And so I think in cross training, there's a little bit more value in that high-end Z2 than there might be in running. And similarly, that's kind of where uphill treadmill comes in, is that I think an uphill treadmill, top-end Z2, is a little bit more beneficial than Z1 because it's almost like a cross-training modality. So I think there's a lot to be found here about how this improves lactate shuttling and mitochondrial efficiency when you're pushing just a little bit harder, but on the things that don't have impact and without totally perverting your intensity distribution.
Well, do you think Parker Valby, with her intensity distribution and her arc training focus, do you think she's going to be an Olympian?
Ah, God, I'm not going to bet against her unless she's arc training against you.
Okay. Which distance? I mean, actually, I would love to see Parker Valby in a steeplechase. I bet you she'd be really good.
She said she's not doing it.
I know. I saw that.
I'm monitoring pretty closely.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm monitoring the fields.
Actually, we have friends. We have athletes we coach in the steeplechase. Yeah. So we are getting territorial about it. We're like, no. Yeah. We're not even going to talk about it on the podcast. We didn't implant any ideas.
I'm going to take it back. The steeplechase is dumb and no one should do it except people we know and coach. Okay, let's go on to a really interesting thing here. This is a Patreon question on process versus results. So Patreon.com/swap, SWAP. We talked about this last week and got a ton of messages that it really resonated with people. And so we wanted to share it here because this is the ultimate crux of everything we talk about, is how do you balance this place where you're like, love yourself, love others, accept yourself, accept others, but also crushing bitches, not blowjobs.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you going to say crushing blowjobs, the adventures of it? And I think it's a really hard place to be. Like, I mean, I feel like both of us have come to that point, but it's taken us a lot of time and a lot of like wading through the shit to get there.
And coaching a ton of athletes through the same thing and seeing the same patterns over and over and over again.
Which is personally helpful. Actually, I feel like for me, coaching has really opened my eyes to like just what matters as an athlete. And it's hard. And I think it's easier said than done. And we flesh it out in the answer to this question. We also talk about pizza bagels too. Are you going to leave that in there?
Oh, you better believe it.
There was a jingle on pizza bagels. Yeah. And every once in a while you like sing a tune and I have no idea where it's going, but I came in on the inference on this one.
Yeah. Yeah. We also talked a little bit about my busted up lip and face just for background context. So here it is. Question from a few episodes back. You always talk about the importance of emphasizing process over outcome, but how do you maintain that healthy mindset come race day? For background, my old coach is almost militant in her stance that you can't have a sustainable approach to running if you compete with anyone but yourself.
Damn.
Whoa. I totally agree that times and placing are outside my sphere of influence, but she strongly disagrees with the idea of me actively battling against others in the heat of the race or having any kind of time goals. On the flip side, you guys openly talk about targeting wins and course records, gaining motivation from mid-race battles, and yet seem to give zero fucks about the end result. How does that work? I've fallen into the comparison trap in a big way in the past, and it's kept me from racing. I'm working through it now, finding my joy in running again, and I want to be able to give my all in a race setting regardless of the outcome. Somehow I just know that the me against myself approach, while mentally comforting, won't get me to the next level.
I love this question. We should actually bring this to the main podcast at some point because I think it is a really interesting discussion about how do you hold these two mindsets in tandem. And I think they're part, they are one mindset, but they are like, it's almost like two trains of thought that come together. But I think go to battle.
Yeah.
Go crush bitches. Yeah. Go do it. Hell but yeah. also like at the end of the day, love those bitches too. Yeah. And I feel like it goes hand in hand. And I feel like for me, I think what I get back to is when I race, it's truly for me, but it's me in competition yeah. to others. But then when I go back and like look at that race result, I have to just reflect, like you're not in control over the bitches you're racing. So when you're crushing bitches, yeah. it's like a metaphorical thing about being out there and being competitive, no matter where you are in the pack.
And it's the mindset.
It's the mindset.
It's
yeah.
the whole point of just being like, we do sports to compete. It's yeah. so fun.
And it's so fun. I mean,
it adds meaning to the process.
Even if you're finishing the very last of a race, compete with the person who's second to very and, last. Yeah.
You know, 4 seconds faster. Fuck yeah. I mean, I think the cool thing about sports is that you get this opportunity to measure yourself in these ways that motivate a daily process that is amazing. So to us, the idea of focusing on the process doesn't mean that the races then don't matter, you shouldn't do them. The point is that the races motivate the process to keep you like incentivized to give your all, to believe in yourself. And then races stress test your actual movement towards self-acceptance, because the whole point of the sport is to wander to self-acceptance while getting tested. So in other words, we want you to crush bitches, but we also want you to do it with a wink, where it's like, I'm not really that serious about this. Kind of like if you play video games, how you probably should play video games, where yeah. it's like, oh, I'm going to crush you. Like you're playing with your bros. I'm going to beat you
Which
down.
Is how I would play video games.
And then at yes. the end, you're just like, oh yeah, let's go have pizza.
How do you do that? So like, I mean, I do feel like for both of us, I feel like it's taking time to get there. Like yeah. For me, I think I had an all-consuming competitive mindset in sports for much of my life. And it's taken now just like hurdles and different things and stepping back from sport for a minute to get there. How do you, I mean, and it's easier said than done to hold the two of these together.
Yeah.
How do you give like concrete evidence or concrete like advice to an athlete that's struggling with this?
I'm just direct and say defense mechanisms got to fucking go.
Yeah.
In the sense
I think a lot of times it is a defense mechanism. Yeah.
Well, it almost always stems back to childhood and views of yourself in relation to others and sports and all of that stuff in general. And for me, it's just like have a direct conversation that like, look, this doesn't fucking matter. But while you're out there, I want it to matter more than anything in the world, because that's why this sport is so magical. And so afterward, we're going to get information. This race is about curiosity and learning. We're going to learn from it. But the only way to learn is at the edge. And the best way to find the edge is by competing with the people around you. And like, yes, you're rooting for them, but most of all, you want to crush their souls. And so in other words, it is all feeding back into this growth mentality of mm-hmm. being like, the actual way that sports can make a difference in your life is by helping you reprogram some of the burdens that you were carrying, and that sports lets you test in a way that nothing else does in the real world. Like, you're not going to get this type of feeling at work, because work is higher stakes. Running has no stakes. So that's where the wink comes in. You crush bitches, but at the end of the day, you'll go get some pizza pockets after. You get some hot pockets.
Some hot pockets?
Some pizza bagels.
Okay, you should just get the whole, I mean, actually pizza bagels are really good.
I was talking about playing video games, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I was going to say, you really need to go to the best pizza place and treat yourself to that good stuff.
After I played video games, I would always get the pizza bagels. Do you remember
those were so
pizza
good.
Pizza in the morning, pizza in the evening, pizza at supper time.
I didn't know the last part. That was great.
When pizza's on a bagel, you can eat pizza anytime.
Dude, you crushed that.
I know. It really
I knew one line in all of that.
It's a core memory for me.
Which I knew from inference and not from actual knowledge.
90s kids out there know what I'm talking about.
Dude, that was good. I'm a 90s kid. I shouldn't really watch TV.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm like a quasi 90s kid.
You're a 90s dork.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm a 90s kid raised by television.
Raised by pizza bagels. Yeah. I was also raised by pizza bagels. I just didn't see the ads for them.
Okay. Do you have anything else on that?
No, I just think it also gets back to like memories and stories too. And yeah. I think the coolest memories come from when you're in competition with people. And then when you finish the race and you're able to like hang out and have pizza bagels together. Yeah. And I think like channel that mindset.
Get vulnerable. Like, the whole thing about running is that you need to make yourself feel that open cut that you're describing from your history of the falling into the comparison trap, to actually have it heal in a way that's stronger. And so, you know, this is your version of getting hit by a car and launched 100 feet.
I was going to say, does that cut have stitches in their lips?
I'm going to come back stronger than ever.
Do you have to take a 7-day hiatus from kissing?
I mean, I'm going to be the best kisser you've ever seen.
Tonight?
Starting tonight. Well, maybe. We'll see what it looks like under.
Oh, man. Are you still going to be what am I looking for?
Megan, I feel like there might be maggots in there or something.
That's beautiful.
I feel like something's going on. There might be staph infections deep inside my lip right now. And we're back. If you like that type of thing, we do bonus podcasts every week on Patreon, patreon.com/swap, and bonus posts. But we also wanted to share one follow-up quote that came to us after we recorded that. This is from Neil Brennan, his new Netflix special, which was outstanding.
It was so good. We've been a long-term fan of Neil Brennan. So he did a comedy special called Three Mics.
Back in 2017.
And it was great. And it really talked about just like his challenges with mental health. And it's almost wild to like be such a close follower of Neil Brennan because he's done so many different therapies for mental health.
Yeah.
And he started this Netflix episode by being like, I'm happy.
Yeah.
And I'm in like creating in this place that is new for me mentally. And It was a very different, like, for like, I feel like classically, like seeing his stuff, this was a very different like tone and take. Yeah. And I think the cool thing is I loved it just as much.
Yeah.
And I think it proves the point that like, you don't need like, contrary to popular opinion, you don't need like depression or anxiety to create great art. Like I think create great art comes from like the person itself, not necessarily the brain state that the person's existing in.
And I think that's really relevant for his take on athletes. So here is a quote from Neil Brennan, and make sure you watch the special. And I want everyone to have great mental health, .. but not athletes. Guys, we need our athletes to be total psychos. You know what I call an athlete with good mental health? An assistant coach, which I thought was a great burn, especially as coaches. But the reason I want to point it out is like, he's making it as a joke. And also like, yes, at the very top end of performance, like Michael Jordan, not a particularly well acclimated person to society. But that's a little different than endurance athletes in all of our journeys.
And he used the example of Tiger Woods of fucking and gaming at the same time. Yeah, like he needed the two of those to go hand in hand. And he fell off when he couldn't. Yeah. He needed to crush blowjobs.
Exactly. But I think what's interesting is that Neil Brennan's special, where he's happy, is the one that reaches the top of the Netflix charts.
Did Three Mics not reach the top of the Netflix charts?
No, not at all. Yeah, I mean, it has a cult following, but it's different. And it points out that, you know, the things that burden us are almost never the things that lead to our greatness. They just coincide and we end up associating the two. So remember, it's all about loving the process and most of all, loving yourself. And I think structuring the daily process through competition is one of the coolest ways to do it and actually gives you the tools to apply it in more high stakes parts of life.
And I think when we say happy, it's like, it's the word that he used. But I think for me, it's like, I feel like happiness almost needs a rebrand to some extent. People have like pushed back against it. But I feel like for me, when I say happiness as it relates to Neil Brennan, or like even as we think about it in the existence of being a runner, it's more about just like self-love and acceptance to handle all the stuff that comes in life. And I don't know, I feel like happiness needs to rebrand in that way.
You recognize the stank, but you don't judge yourself for it.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the way I dealt with the accident is probably a good way to illustrate it, right? Like, it's not toxic positivity to say, oh, the world's like going to move on and I'm happy to be here to move on with it, while recognizing that it absolutely fucking sucks and I wish it didn't happen, right? And similarly, like the way we talk about happiness is trying to accept yourself even when you get hit by metaphorical cars.
Metaphorical Subaru is going 20 miles an hour.
Yes. Okay, on to news and fun things. Lots of really cool ones today. We'll see. Let's just throw in a mishmash. The first is Altra, the running shoe brand, released more shoes with drop, including some trail shoes. And guess what, Megan?
What?
I'm hearing great things about them.
I am too. Yeah. It's kind of wild. Actually, talk about rebranding. And they were really committed to the zero drop bit for a bit. And to the point where they've actually dropped that term. They now use balance cushioning to describe their shoes. They no longer use zero drop. And I wonder, they were bought by the VF Corporation, I think back in like 2018. Like, what mitigated that change?
Yeah.
And it's almost like, I wonder to some extent, like to break into a field, you have to be different at the start. Yeah. And then I feel like almost all companies kind of like regress to the mean as you become more popular and reach the top level.
Interesting. That's a good like business theory on it.
Do you agree with that? Or am I just spewing shit?
I just think it's that their initial thesis wasn't proven to be true.
And I think it was the trend at the time. Like that was like when like barefoot running was a big deal. And now I feel like there's been a pushback against that.
They were hashtag influenced by Born to Run.
Yeah, right.
Much like most people were. Much like I was even a little bit. Granted, at least I was farther into running. If Born to Run came out in 2005 or whatever, and I picked it up as right when I was starting running, oh my God.
I wonder if you'd still be here.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, your Achilles would be shredded.
So I'm pretty excited about this because a lot of what Altra does with the wide toe boxes and really comfortable shoes and good foams makes a lot of sense.
Actually, that's like your dream. You are a wide toe box boy, as embarrassing as it is to say.
Am I going
to
become an Altra boy?
Are you? I mean, I feel like you should try them.
Next review.
I know, the shoe review. Yeah. I actually messed up on the shoe review last week and I said that my Kinvara Pro had a nylon plate and actually has a carbon plate. But I love that. I think you probably knew that.
Yeah.
And you're going to let me run in a carbon plated shoe quite often. I've only run in it twice, but you're just going to let me believe that I was running in a nylon plated shoe because I imagine like there's psychological gains from that.
Wait, why are you blaming me for anything?
Because you
I'm not responsible for your ignorance. Yeah. That's on you.
That is, it is on me, but you could have told me.
I have no obligation to correct you for your mistakes. That's for you and your maker and your labia. All four actually make that decision together. Okay, next up is a controversy from track and field. This is that FloTrack will be broadcasting the Diamond League meets, which are the big international track meets, replacing NBC/Peacock. And the big concern here is that Peacock costs like $6 a month to subscribe to. And FloTrack costs $30 per month for way less content.
$30 a month? That's really expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, I pay I think Zwift is like $16 a month, and we use that quite often. I'm not trying to think about like Spotify, $10 a month.
Yeah, Patreon, you get bonus podcasts and all this content for $5 a month.
Yeah. Also, think about like the comparison between what's on Peacock versus what's on FloTrack. Yeah. And like, there's a lot of other stuff I want to watch on Peacock. And honestly, I think this is the death of track and field. In terms of like, I mean, that's like a David statement. That's a little extreme, but I feel like track and field needs something to revitalize itself. It does not need this.
Yeah. I mean, it's at least a step back.
Maybe it's because the uniforms were too X-rated for Peacock. They had to go to FloTrack. You had to verify that you're 18.
Well, speaking of, you know, I was just thinking.
What?
FloTrack would be a great name for a menstrual cycle tracking app.
That's true.
Yeah. So maybe they have a rebrand coming.
You're really good at this. I've often asked you, I'm like, give me a name for some like female athlete specific thing. And you're always so good at it.
Sometimes some people's heads are up in the clouds. Some people's heads are up in the labia.
I was going to say, you are the tampon.
Whoa. Be the tampon. It's like Matrix, be the spoon.
I know. And then I just like pop you out because my postpartum can't deal with that. I'm like, no more of that.
No. That might be too far, but you know what?
We've already gone real far.
Perfect. Yeah, no, I think maybe a hopeful look on this is, yes, it's going to decrease viewership. But it's almost like when evolutionarily there's the constraints on growth, like snowball Earth, let's say, where Earth becomes immensely cold, gets covered in ice. After that is things like the Cambrian explosion, when life just really multiplies because some of the constraints and were taken away. And so hopefully what happens here is that we understand that this isn't the way to grow track and field. And then after it is something that's totally different.
Well, that's like, extremely hopeful.
Well, my point is, I don't think what NBC was doing was going to help the sport either. It's not going to grow it, right? Like track is only interesting if you either know people or are really interested in the sport. Most of the time, that means you do it on a level that's pretty competitive and you're really interested. Like you're not catching other athletes, but maybe there's a way for track to be interesting if you make it really friendly to like the gamification experience where the user is involved in predictions and maybe even gambling, even though that's a rough patch in itself. Maybe there's ways to broadcast this that will be better. Maybe FloTrack will be a laboratory for that. I'm not 100% hopeful, but you know what NBC was doing wasn't working either.
That's fair. But I like your optimism, but I don't think we're heading towards the Cambrian explosion. I think this is bad news bears.
Yeah.
I think the planet is about to go into a deep, deep cold frost.
Yeah. Well, more viewers for trail running.
Yeah. But it actually goes to show, I mean, I feel like, so this weekend, Gorge, there was the 30K, 50K, 100K presented by Free Trail. And the live coverage was so good.
Live coverage done by Mountain Outpost.
Yeah. But what I love about the live coverage is, you know, there's times in trail running when a runner's not coming through or there's not a lot of action going on. And they showed the most beautiful trail running shots, like waterfalls, the trails. Like it was beautiful and really captured the imagination in a way that, like, I mean, you can show me 25,000 tracks and I'm like, cool.
Yeah.
And trails are totally different. Like trails are beautiful. And I feel like as much as like this is challenging for track running, it makes me think about the possibilities and opportunities for trail running coverage.
And I think there's a huge area for growth. This might be an even another news.
There's a Cambrian explosion in trail running.
No. So I just think that there's still room and to make it more like a storytelling podcast experience, almost like a baseball game. Mm-hmm. So if anyone out there has ever watched baseball, usually they're not talking about the game. Like the announcers just go and talk about their trips, their whatever. You have to, because not that much happens in baseball. Similarly in trail running, most of the time, not that much is going to be happening in these long broadcasts. And my dream is basically that you and I get to talk over one of these live broadcasts. So yeah, we'll know a lot about the sport and the athletes and all that good stuff. But otherwise, we just get to shoot the shit about fun topics.
It'd be the Cambrian explosion as like, we're waiting for runners to come through.
Yeah. But seriously, I think that is the place where trail running can become a really interesting place, is how can we broadcast these events so that every moment is interesting if you're interested in the people broadcasting it?
Well, I think you can also pull in stories and narratives. Yeah. Like I feel like I see that oftentimes in like cycling races where they have like short clips and things like that.
They do pretty good on that, but you have to care so much about the sport for that. I think there's a place to make it much more broadly applicable. And people like Dylan and Corinne would be amazing at that. But you also have to take in that you'd get criticism from listeners that are like, talk about the race. And it's like, okay, here's how I talk about the ultra race. Nothing has happened in 1 hour. Here are some beautiful shots as we're going to be talking about how evolutionary theory applies to labia.
Well, I do feel like it's actually really helpful in terms of like strategy and tactics. And so I heard out there that Lottie Brinks, who went on to win the 100K at Gorge, was actually using information from the broadcast that people were telling her to understand where she was in the place of the field. And you know, in cycling, like they have radios that coaches and teams are using to communicate with athletes. But oftentimes in trails, you're just like left out there and you're like, where's second place? Where's third place? I don't know. Sometimes athletes don't even know where they are in the place of the race. And I'm curious to see how broadcasting and like, even if we're like broadcasting positions and places, how that impacts strategy.
Yeah, it's going to be so interesting.
Yeah. Do you think it's going to impact strategy? Like at Western States, like you run through Forest Hill and there's a leaderboard that tells you splits and where people are.
Yeah, I think a little bit, but we still have room to go because the broadcasts aren't that reliable either.
That's true. Actually, neither are live trackers. Like David's like apparently supposedly in the middle of the woods somewhere and your live trackers didn't work.
You thought I was dead at Canyons 100K last year.
Oh, so many. Actually, it was the best thing because like it was actually much like this accident experience. I had so much gratitude for you finishing.
Yeah.
Because I thought you were dead. And then all of a sudden you were coming through the finish. I was like, he's here.
My finish at
Canyons. He came. Finally.
He has risen and he came. My finish last year was much like getting hit this year. Very, very much gratitude, but could have gone better, I would say. Okay. Of these stories, do you want to go through any more before we get to hot takes?
Do you want to go to art, but make it sports? Because I feel like that kind of gets on to like the broadcast and like, I don't know how we're thinking about and like talking about sports and the evolutionary history.
Okay. So my all-time favorite social media account is called Art, But Make It Sports. Check it out on your social media. Twitter is where I watch it, but I think it's probably on Instagram too. And it is the coolest thing I've ever seen. It's this guy who just uses sports photos, and it can be from any sport. Like he's done tons of women's sports lately, cycling, you know, every major sport, and then posts side by side with a painting from history that is almost a dead replica or has some direct comparison to that photo. It is the weirdest brain accomplishment I have ever seen. And I need other people to see it because I think it's the most brilliant examination of how people's brains work differently. And that this person has some wild capability that, you know, you never would have discovered unless he tried this little thing.
Well, I was gonna say, I feel like this is to me is the notion of like combining talents together.
Yeah.
So he's creating this like obscure, I mean, these are like, this is not the Mona Lisa. These are like obscure art history pictures and images right alongside sports. And it's like, there's probably one person in the world that has the ability to mash those two talents together. And for the longest time, I was like, is he using AI? But I've seen he's actually done it live and like publicly, and it's definitely within his brain.
One of my favorite episodes of a podcast is on Pablo Torre Finds Out. It's an amazing podcast. Listen to it if you like sports or just, you know, thinking about things deeply. And he interviewed this creator and had him do it on the fly, and he crushed it in like 2 seconds. It's just, to me, it's incredibly inspiring to let your brain open up freely and see what falls out. Because sometimes it might be something brilliant like this, or other times it might be bad jokes about labia. But either way, you're only going to find out where your abilities lie if you let it open and out into the world, you know, which is a really interesting thing to say after talking about labia.
Are you using it as plural?
Labia. Isn't it? I don't know.
I think it is. I'm actually struggling here.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you brought it up, but you don't even know.
I don't know the answer. I know. But you know what? That's a good thing. You should bring things up that you don't. I'm questioning.
Okay. You're questioning.
I'm unsure. Okay. But you and I actually do. That's really weird.
What?
Is sports, but make it animals. So often when I see athletes competing or doing things, I like picture what it would be in animal form. Yeah. So like Helen O'Beery today doing the Boston Marathon, she looked like a velociraptor coming through.
Yeah.
You know, like that, just like really going for it.
Yeah.
And then the other day I saw a video of Schemo athletes like at the start of a race. The start of Schemo races looks hilarious.
Yeah. What would you say animal-wise?
Like praying mantises all coming together.
No. Just thinking of this off the top of my head.
Yeah.
It looks like when one of those fish schools reaches the surface of the water to like mate or something. And it's just like
just like this like weird frenzy of like uncoordinated arms and legs activity. If you haven't seen the start of a Schemo race, it looks really funny. What they're doing is epic. It's like a sheer VO2 max test, like badass sport, but the start looks funny.
It looks terrible. It looks so terrible. It looks even worse than Flow Track Broadcasting Diamond League.
I think the only thing that looks worse is my form. My arm carriage.
Oh, your form.
What does my form look like in animal?
interesting thought. I should probably sit this one out. Yeah. No.
We're in a loving space. Yeah. Right now.
No, I mean, I think you look like an antelope, you know, which are really fast, but that has an
inner... With its head cut off or a vestibular disorder.
I was going to say an inner ear disorder. You nailed it. Which is fine. Inner ear disorders, you know, whatever.
We uplift all inner ear disorders.
A gazelle with vertigo.
Oh, at least I'm part gazelle.
Yeah. Okay, on the hot takes. Before we do that, get yourself some Athletic Greens. As I've been recovering, last night I was having a crisis and I was like, you know what I'm going to do, Megan, tomorrow?
Are you going to take 18 servings?
No, I'm going to take three today.
Three is at least reasonable. Yeah.
I need to try to up it. I've only been taking one and I'm going to try to up it, see if that helps. So drinkag1.com/swap, S-W-A-P. We use it every day. Remember, this is a multivitamin that has some extras in it. We're not trying to oversell anything it does, but for us, it has made a pretty big difference in how we feel day to day and pretty indispensable to our process.
Also, there's something just like mentally nice about drinking it. I think because it makes me feel good where I'm like, rawr. I'm unleashing my inner gazelle with a vestibular disorder.
Okay.
Yes. I'm like, I fully own it after drinking Athletic Greens.
Do you think it clears inner ear problems?
Maybe.
Probably not.
Probably not.
No.
I know this is, it's like as much as I want Athletic Greens to solve the world, it only solves a few small things, but those things matter.
Yeah. And multivitamins are good. We actually have a study, maybe we'll get to it next week, about how multivitamin intake, contrary to what a lot of people say, can be protective for cognitive issues, pretty relevant to some of the things we talked about in older people.
Yes. And a nutritional study that has – nutritional studies are very challenging.
Yes. You can't say any disclaimers when I'm doing an advertisement.
Yeah. I feel like whenever people – sometimes people like to come at us for like our advertisements. They're like, you support Athletic Greens. It's like, yeah, we
use it.
We use it. We back it up. It's good
we
stuff.
We bought it before we – it's like you don't have to say something is like the greatest thing in the world. It's like, yeah, this is good. We like it.
Yeah, but they come at you instead of me.
Yeah. And isn't that funny?
I know. But you're the one that actually sells stuff, so
yeah, yeah. But it's pretty funny though that like whenever we do anything like questionable, you know, like taking ads is always awkward in any world. Like it, you know, unless essentially like nothing is pure as the river runs cleanly, or
nothing
whatever.
Is as pure as Athletic Greens.
Yeah, yeah. Boom. Just third party tested, NSF certified. Now they're gonna come after you for that salesmanship. I love it so much. Okay, on to hot takes. I can't wait for Peloton to go under. Oh, shit. So I can replace my wife's silly bike with a direct drive trainer in Zwift, which is half the size and half the price.
I didn't realize that direct drive trainers are half the price of Zwift.
Than
Pelotons.
Yeah.
Direct drive trainers are, we love them. They're amazing. They're quiet, connect to Zwift very easily. That being said, I actually did love the Peloton. Sometimes
I like
when
Pelotons
I
a lot.
Yeah. They've got like good scenic rides.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very different than cycling in the sense that the...
Matt Wilpers, I love him.
Oh, who's he?
He's one of the instructors.
Is he on the list?
He's... I don't know where he stands next to Patrick. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, he's on the list.
Okay, he's on the list. All right.
You need to research him.
Okay, I don't know him, but
yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
You'll see. Yeah. Matt, I'll start telling Leo the name Matt so he knows how to say it. But what's interesting to me here is that Peloton feels a lot different than a bike to me. It's much, much smoother through the pedal stroke. And so it's quite comfortable in a way that sometimes biking can be a little bit more almost like a violent motion. Peloton is very smooth, like abnormally smooth, disturbingly smooth. Like
fire and ice smooth.
Rubric and smooth, exactly.
I knew where you were going. Do you think that translates to cycling? Like if you're a professional cyclist and you're riding a Peloton and the sensation is different, the sensation is fire and ice, do you think that translates?
I think it translates probably like trail running translates to road running.
Yeah.
Or road running translates to like, maybe not that direction, but in the sense that I don't think it's a one-to-one power-to-power ratio, but I do think it's pretty close, obviously, because it's basically the same motion. But might be almost more similar to like how a rower becomes a cyclist rather than a cyclist to a cyclist. Like it feels different and that's fine. Especially like getting good at the Peloton will probably make you better at cycling, but it won't be a one-to-one watt ratio.
Yeah. It's fascinating to think about that. Also, we need to get you a Peloton because right now having you in like a more aero position on a classic bike, like the bikes that we have, very uncomfortable for
your
wrist.
I know I can't even ride right now with one hand. So it's rough because like when I rode your bike, I was just riding upright with no hands.
Which is actually kind of hard to do.
Yeah.
Your hamstrings are apparently so sore after that.
Oh, Megan, I'm suffering over here.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
But it's looking up.
Yes.
It's looking up. We're three servings of Athletic Greens and hope for the best. Okay. Number two. Last one. Strava needs a box to check for when you're pushing a stroller. Bonus if you can input the weight of your kids so you know how much extra work it is to push them up the hill. I call the stroller the hill amplifier.
Oh, for sure. Running with a stroller is hard.
Yeah.
It actually, it's almost like a Peloton as the Peloton is so smooth. It's so lubricated. Yeah. Running with a stroller is the exact opposite. You're like chafing. It's friction. It's a lot. Yeah.
I like how we decided we're just not going to do that.
No, we don't actually. No. Yeah. And we just actually, I mean, we're fortunate and we've worked hard for this, but we prioritize our childcare in our training windows.
We'll trade off, yeah. You know, like on a weekend, it's just one of us and then one of us and we'll make it happen. But I almost feel like it's like a toughness thing for me. It's like, I'm not tough enough to ride in a stroller, or maybe even more. I don't want that little shit to tell me not to run anymore. What if I get to mile 2 and he tells me to turn around?
It's hard. It's like the unpredictability of it is hard. Yeah. But I actually really wanted to run with a stroller. Like, I feel like there's something empowering as a mom when I'm pushing a stroller. I'm like, this is my baby. I love this. And you were like, you're going to get injured. You wouldn't let me. I've tried to go out to run like with a stroller so many times out the door. And you're like, Megan, no.
It's just once that you tried to do it. And multiple I called times. You out. Yeah, that was when you were dealing with so many injuries and going through. I would let you do it now. And I would let you do anything. You're your own woman. Your labia, your choice.
Yeah, great. My labia, my stroller.
Okay, on to Listener Corner. Before we do that, do you have anything to say to our listeners?
Just that, well, one, David, I love you. This is, I think, like the first time we've actually cried in an episode. Yeah. It got hard there to talk for a minute. Oh, you probably heard us be speechless.
Yeah. It comes back to that freaking little shit that you talked about. You know, like, I don't know. For me, I guess my brain is so encoded with you that the journey with you is just like one-to-one, right? Like I finished got in the ambulance and the first thing I think about is you. But like Leo is still becoming a part of my life. Like 17 months in is not a lifetime, right? Like I've been with you for 14 years and thinking about like not just the next 17 months, but 17 years and like everything else he has to come.
It's like a country song. You know how they like walk you through like your baby being born and they're like the next day they're going to like USC or like whatever the country song school is. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, thinking about that and then thinking about yesterday when we took him on his first like legit hike and we
crushed it.
He climbed like a mountain, you know, 25% grade at times and he did it. It was really remarkable. And I'm just like, wow. I mean, not to say that I'm indispensable in this kid's life, but I want to be there to see it. I never thought I'd be like that with a kid. Like as someone that was skeptical, I just want to get to see him grow up. And
you are indispensable. Actually, he face planted. He like Superman'd going down the mountain yesterday and I was going to pick him up and you're like, don't touch him.
No.
And that's indispensable. Like, it's like, well, I mean, but truly, I mean, that's a funny thing, but truly like you are indispensable. And the fact that the only word he says is dada is telling.
Yeah.
Granted, maybe if something different happened in the accident, he would actually say mama.
Yeah.
But like, it is really hard. I mean, it's been like, there's been moments, like even when we were climbing the mountain yesterday, I like thought my brain went to that. And I was like, what if the outcomes were different?
Yeah. He would definitely be saying mama sooner. Yeah, I know. We got a lot of messages from listeners about his speech process. So yeah. Thank you, Megan. I mean, it's just, I'm so lucky to be here and I love you so much. And to the listeners, like we got so many messages and it means a ton. Like, this is hard. This is hard for sure. But knowing people are out there that care and it matters to them too, makes it just a little bit easier to get out there in a sling and to understand that this is going to be a rough road. But that's why we trail run. We like the roughness.
Yeah. Well, it's also a road too, that it's like, I think sometimes the hardest part is going to be, instead of going out to run in a sling, it's going to be going to ride on the Peloton that we find, because it's like, you know, in the process of brain recovery, like sometimes it's not about running in a sling. It's about, you know, sitting on the Peloton.
Oh, Megan, my brain's rocking. My brain is so good. Yeah. My brain is on fucking fire.
You can see me trying to like maneuver myself in here. I'm like, how about a few rest days? What about some biking? What about some arc trainer?
Yeah. A lot of people have like messaged and like, you've given me hope about my return to whatever. And I'm like, you don't know the full story.
I feel like dog shit.
Yeah. I do what I say and not what I do necessarily. But things are looking up. We love you all. All right. On to Listener Corner. Hey, I keep thinking about this while listening to you guys on my runs and then completely forgetting that I wanted to tell you. But I finally logged into Patreon just to say that the Solo David Collector's Editions, which is when I do a podcast solo because Megan has something to do. Maybe that'll be a next week thing before Canyons.
No, for sure not. Also, it's not next week. It's the following week.
Wait, no. Canyons is next week.
Oh, fuck. You're right.
Yeah.
My brain's healthy. That's true. No, I love podcasting. We're definitely doing it on.
Are you ready for next week?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. The race next week?
The race next week.
Okay. Just want to make sure. Yeah. A little bit worrisome there, Megan. A little bit worrisome. And the David plus Megan podcasts are both amazing in their own ways. You two definitely make for one of the best podcasting teams ever. But David, you somehow managed to keep things so engaging. Also, I had to stop on the side of the trail, hilarious, on your own, that I forget that you're just sitting there by yourself, staring at a microphone and a screen, or nothing? Somehow the episode still feels like a personal conversation with the listener, which is a real talent. Honestly, it's not worse at all, just different, and I love it. Anyway, no questions for now, but thank you.
I love, it's always so fun. Like sometimes I'm actually here, like downstairs with Leo when we don't have childcare. I think it's, I've missed like 3 Patreon episodes.
Yeah.
But seeing you like up here and I can hear you laughing to yourself is one of the, I just love you so much for that. It's so cool that like to be able to do that, it's a skill, it's hard.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I love that your brain is able to do that and just like free associate on your own and be weird and be different. And it's cool.
What have you thought about my dictation this week? Because we didn't talk about how this influences you because you get to hear so much of my coaching process.
I laugh now. This is the cool thing. I'm actually going to be sad when you go back to typing because yeah. I probably laugh like 15 times more during the day just hearing the things that you say into dictation.
Does anything I say make you worried?
Oh, yeah, a lot of it. I already knew that though. I knew that when I married you.
Devil you know versus devil you don't?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, okay, well, this is my devil.
Okay.
You said something like the other day, you're like, pooping your pants is the highest honor.
Yeah, yeah. It is.
It is.
You know, actually, I think often like in life, as runners especially, like, you know, the ultimate example of what we're doing on a daily basis and how it structures the process that we talked about earlier is the fact that we'll sometimes do it to the point that we shit ourselves. Yeah. We'll slut ourselves. Make it, we'll just absolutely go out there, run so hard that we slut our pants.
Okay, well, the next time I shit my pants, I'm going to be like, I'm slutting my pants. This is for me.
And everyone, go out there and crush some blowjobs.
Woohoo!
Huzzah.